Let's get going today. How's everybody doing? Good. Two students reported they have the flu, so I have some hand sanitizer up here, and there's some in the back there, and I encourage everybody to wash their hands on the way out. Not that we're full of germs or anything, but just in case. So, first question I have for you, is anybody stuck? Does anybody, any student, not know what they're supposed to do or need help in getting going? If you do, if you ever feel that way throughout the quarter, send me an email, give me a call, visit me, arrange for a meeting. You shouldn't feel stuck. I can help you through that. So, okay. This is the agenda for today. The big news is that next Thursday, we're going to Willow Garage, and Willow Garage, in case you don't know, is a company that makes high-end robotics, so it's going to be a real treat. They're right here in Menlo Park. It's maybe about 5 miles away. This is just for students and drivers. How many people anticipate going and need a ride next week? Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay, we have a number of drivers signed up already. If you're willing to, maybe one more driver. I have a sign up for drivers here. Do you have a car that can? Okay, sign up afterwards as a driver. And on next Tuesday, once I have the driver information ready, then you'll be able to sign up with a particular driver. And I'll make sure everybody knows who everybody else is. That's the next thing I was going to say. I was thinking that since it's easy for people to park right out here, how many people would use this as a meeting place to meet your driver? Would that be a good place, or do you have any other good meeting places? I was thinking maybe on the top of the Oval or a Peterson building, but if this is okay over here, I'll have all the drivers meet you here. Is that, anybody have a problem with that? Does that sound good? Okay, great. So this is, the tour is just for students and drivers, other people we just don't have room for. So I'm sorry about that. Does any student who's going have to leave early? Because we'll probably be there until at least 5:30. Okay, that's good. So I'll have maps for the drivers next Thursday. And it's not too far to bike either, so if you're into that and it's nice weather, then you might choose to go there. So, okay. Back to team projects again. Everybody, there's still a few people who haven't sent me their project preferences. I need to do that immediately. You know, look at the projects, figure out what your top preferences are. Email it to me. I have a list and a webpage where I have everybody listed. And if you need more information, talk to the person who suggested the project or talk to me. I can help you out with that. And then once all the projects are on the webpage, which they are, you can look at that webpage and see if there's other people that have similar project interests and sort of, you know, get together and form a team. And as I mentioned, teams can be teams of 3, 2, or 1 person. So it'd be great if you could send me your team information by the end of the day tomorrow. So I need to know who's on the team, what your team name is, what project you're working on, the name that you have for your project, your team's name for the project, and later on think about the name for the device that you're building or the software that you're building, but that should come a little bit later after you get a feel for what kind of character it might have. Okay? And you might also think about a logo if you're a visual person, so that really helps identify you as a team. And it'd be good for the teams to meet with me as a team next week so we can discuss the project and we can meet together and get you on your way. So it'll probably be only about 15 minutes for a team meeting. Okay? There's several people that are working on individual projects. They need to meet with me and discuss the project ideas they have, and we can agree on the project. Those are people that are working on projects for one unit. Okay. Oh. On the attendance sheet today is a field where you can indicate if you need a PRL room and room 36 shop pass for this quarter. This would be for people who are working on team projects and don't already have a pass. So please, you know, sign the attendance sheet and check the box if you need a PRL pass. Okay? And I'll take care of getting you the passes. Ah, the photo of the day. So, you know, you can have, there are people with disabilities and there's animals with disabilities, and I'm sure you've all seen dogs, you know, that are injured. How many have seen a dog where their back end is on a little wheel device and they walk around that? You know? So here's an elephant who got caught in a trap and had to amputate part of his foot. So I'm not sure if you can develop a prosthetic for it, but I don't know how this elephant gets around, but you know, this happens a lot. So I just want to show you that. So now we're going to have a little discussion. The first thing I talk about is who is disabled. Now I bring this up not to label people as disabled or not disabled. That's not my point at all. In fact, I'm against doing that. But rather that I'm using it to generate discussion here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a little bit of information about a person. And you tell me, just from that information, if you think that describes a person with a disability or not. This is real easy. Okay? So I'll read it. 70-year-old Englishman with ALS, cannot walk, talk, or personally perform any of the usual activities of daily living. He has only a very limited control of one finger and one facial muscle. What do you think? Huh? I can't hear what you're saying. Obviously, this is a description of a person who's pretty disabled. Wouldn't you agree? Okay. Here's the next piece of information. This individual employs a powered wheelchair for his mobility. Now what do you think? Maybe a little less disabled, but still disabled. He can't talk, but he can move around, which is really important. Mobility is a very important function to have. If you're not able to move around, then you know somebody has to push you around. Okay? So still sort of disabled, right? This individual uses a speech generating communication to the device so he can talk. Well, if you have communication and mobility, that's a pretty good mix of things. So what do you think now? Well, this person can use this device to generate speech that you can understand. Well, in this case, I'm talking about a speech output device. Okay. What do you think? Okay. So the next and last piece of information is that the individual I'm describing is Stephen Hawking, often described as the smartest person alive. What do you say now? Is this person disabled? Is the smartest person alive a person with a disability? Yes. Okay. Right. So this is, you know, very curious. So what makes a difference between his ability and disability? What makes him the smartest person in the world? Here's a hint. Here's a hint. It's in the name of this course. Come on. Assistive technology makes a difference for Stephen Hawking, because otherwise it's just going to be somebody sitting, you know, not being able to talk or move around. But because of assistive technology, he's able to write books, be on TV, communicate to people, people understand that he's smart. He can communicate how bright he is. Great. No, he was a professor before he had ALS, so that's a degenerative disease.
Yeah, when he was in college, he just moved on. He didn't want to be great, like he said.
No, he was a bright guy back then too.
So
he didn't try.
Well, that's besides the point. So my observation here, and your observation should be as well, that even individuals with severe disabilities like Stephen Hawking can perform pretty well. They can achieve. They can be smart. They can be make a difference in the world. That's that. So we're going to do one more, and this one is even easier. Superman came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men. Disabled? What do you think? Yes or no?
No. It's that piece of the opposite of being disabled. That's why there's super in his name, because he's beyond able. He's super able, right? What can he do? He can fly. He can x-ray vision. Strength. He has big lungs. He can create wind. He can go around the world really fast and turn back time, right?
So, would everybody agree this is not a disabled person? But what if next to a piece of kryptonite? Disabled? Disabled. So what am I trying to say here with this? That there are situations where even the most able-bodied people, you know, can be temporarily disabled. Can you think about other situations, more real-world situations than this? Please come in and sit down. Oh, okay. Other situations where you're temporarily disabled, impaired?
Underwater.
Sorry?
Underwater.
Underwater. Well, hopefully you will come up or have a scuba gear, right? But that's a piece of assistive technology. You know, you can see that assistive technology for you know, doing stuff underwater. But what else?
Under the influence.
Oh, okay. It's like you have a personal experience with that. Oh, what else?
Every time I plug my earbuds into my ears and I'm listening to
okay.
music or something, yeah. Missing out on other sounds.
Okay. What happens? What about when you have the flu? Yeah, that's a big one. So, one student said a few years ago that, you know, she has allergies. So if you have an allergy attack, you know, you're pretty well out of it, right? But you recover. And then you can also think about things like breaking your leg or twisting your ankle or other sports injuries that, you know, we all seem to get. So, what's the point of all this? Well, in the two examples that I gave, by revealing information just one little bit at a time, you might not get a complete picture of a person. In looking at a person with a disability, you might not get a complete picture of their abilities or disabilities. And but as more is revealed about them, as more that you learn about a person with a disability or a fellow student with a disability, the more you can understand what their capabilities are. And so it's important to keep that in mind, because the first time you see somebody with a disability, you might get the wrong impression. It's a first impression, but it may be wrong. So, but in a more general sense, when we get limited, incomplete, or biased information, we may not be able to really understand what's going on here. And this happens all the time, every day. When we talk about political issues, we talk about, you know, propositions on the ballot. When people tell us about somebody else's character, other people are recommended to us in product advertising. The advertising is done by the company that makes the product. That's sort of one-sided, right?
What about, can every time I see somebody park in a disabled parking lot, they get out of their car, go there, and walk in normally.
Right.
Are they disabled?
Sometimes.
I've never seen one look disabled.
Okay. A lot of times you hear on the news about a particular... it's the reports on the news, you know, can be one-sided as well. So you're not getting complete information there. And, you know, you might want to... You ask somebody about, you know, how was that movie that you saw? And they said it's great, and you go to see it, and you thought it sucked. So everybody has their own opinion. So this kind of thing where you don't get full information applies not only to people with disabilities, but in our daily life. Okay? There are a lot of other conditions that can affect one's communication ability, you know, and a lot of these are hidden, like brain injury, PTSD, or other psychological factors. So there's a lot of hidden things that you can't see that might influence their ability to communicate. And if you assume that they're able to communicate, you may get the wrong impression. And other hidden disabilities, you know, if you have a little bit of a hearing loss or a vision loss and you don't use a piece of assistive technology, you know, me without my contacts on, I'm not going to perform very well. And people who, some people use prosthetics and orthotics really well, and you don't know that they're disabled because they seem to walk fine, but, you know, that they are wearing a prosthetic. There's a lot of people with learning or developmental disabilities that may not be apparent when you look at them. And other people might have progressive diseases, which, you know, they may be function well now, but their health is going to be in decline over the years. So it's important to understand all these things. Any questions about this? Okay. So next Tuesday is going to be a fantastic lecture. We're going to have a panel of students with disabilities who are going to be right here, and they're courageous enough and open enough to come and talk about themselves, their disability, their lives as Stanford students, and their goals for themselves, and also show what assistive technology or techniques they use to be successful students. I guarantee 100% that you will thoroughly enjoy it because it's been that way for the last 3 years. Okay, so that's next Tuesday. But today, we have Debbie Kenny. Wait a second. Our first guest tonight has had 2 Oscar nominations and is a recent Golden Globe Award winner. Oops!
Oh,
wrong introduction. Sorry.
Got my gown.
Debbie Kenny is an occupational therapist. She's been an OT for over 17 years. She now splits her time between Stanford and the VA in Palo Alto, where she collaborates on numerous design development research projects with both engineers and graduate students. Maybe she'll talk a little bit about herself, but we're going to take a short break before she comes on, and so this is an opportunity for you to stretch a little bit, and then Debbie will start her presentation.
And Stanford students, I would really encourage you to move forward. I have things to share and pass around, and it'd be a lot easier if you guys filled in down here.
Okay, here's your microphone.
Gang's all here. Albert's up there. Yeah. Two things.
You can have them in the front.
Okay.
Okay. And
You don't have to take the mic off or hold it. Just stand close to them.
Okay. I think I'll do that because I think last time there's so much little.
So this is the forward. This is the pointer.
Okay. Great. Let's do it. One mic. Yeah, I think so. Let's do that. Yeah, let's do that.
For sure.
That's too much to do, but I'm going to do it like this, and we'll move this here. Just a little bit. There we go. Okay. Waving. Okay. Just a reminder that I am a resource person for this course. I've been helping out with this course and with graduate students at Stanford in design for, five, 6 years at least. Even if my project isn't one of the projects that you picked, I'm a good resource to talk to. Okay?
She would especially be helpful for students who are working with an individual with a disability.
Right.
Okay. Here's Debbie.
Yeah. So we want to talk today a little bit about how the products get to the consumers. It's not a magic wand. And what's an appropriate device for a consumer? And what is the rehab team? So I am one of the members of the rehab team. I'm an occupational therapist. So I assist people to function independently in all their areas of work, play, and self-care. And I hope that there's a balance, and I hope that you have a balance of work, play, and self-care. And we do independence through functional activities. This makes us a little bit different than a physical therapist, in that a physical therapist, they use physical modalities in order to gain their goal. We try to use functional modalities. So in terms of what we mean by function, any of the functions that you need to do in your daily life, we want to be able to work with that. For instance, I like to use myself as an example. I got hit on my bike, and I ended up with a shoulder injury. And with my shoulder injury, I needed to rehab it, and I needed to strengthen the muscles that go back and forwards like this. Now, I could have sat there with a piece of TheraBand, which is like a stretchy big rubber band, and going like this a lot, and that was boring. I had kids, so I had a built-in thing where I could take them out to the park, and I could put them on the swing, and I could get them to swing, and I'd get that exact same movement with the exact same kind of resistance that I needed. Now, which do you think was more motivating for me, going out to the park with my kids or sitting there and doing this with a piece of TheraBand? Us therapists, we like to give homework oftentimes. And if the homework is boring and it doesn't meet your needs, you're not going to do it. If you can't see the point of it, you're not going to do it. And the other thing that's important is that occupational therapists treat the whole person. A lot of times people like to cut occupational therapy from here on up. So we only deal with arms or we only deal with the brain. And that's not true at all. As my students will tell you, that posture, balance, being able to stand is as much a part of function as using your arms. And you can't have good use of your arms if you don't have good control over your trunk, right? And not only do we work with people with physical disabilities, we also work with people with mental disabilities as a whole. I'm part of a large transdisciplinary team. Have you ever seen this word before, physiatrist? Anybody know what a physiatrist might be? Not even none of my students from REACH can answer. Yeah? Anybody? No. A physiatrist is a rehabilitation doctor. Okay. And they're the direct contact usually with the patient. Then we have a lot of different people. We have our therapists, our speech therapists, our occupational therapists, our prosthetists, people who deal with hearing devices, people who are social workers, being able to make sure that people are placed correctly out in the community and the family's needs are being met, medical consultants, people who are vendors.
oftentimes will fit people for adaptive technology. So it's a really big team, and it's good to know that it's not just one person, that there's a lot of people looking out for people who need rehabilitation. So assistive technology are, of course, products or equipment that, whether they're commercially available or modified or customized, are used to increase or improve the functional capabilities of individuals with disabilities. Only one tool that I use is an occupational therapist. I use other tools out there, but adaptive technology, you see, is a big part of it. So when we talk about adaptive technology, and we talked a little bit about being able to function as independently as possible, we talk about what we call activities of daily living. The things that you need to do from the time that you get up to the time that you go to sleep. What is it that you need to do? Well, I need to be able to get my feet out of bed. I need to be able to stand up. I need to be able to go to the toilet. I need to be able to brush my teeth. All of those things. And if you have a condition that, whether it's something that's sudden, like an accident or a neurological condition, that keeps you from doing those, we need to intervene, right? We need to do rehabilitation on you. So these are some of the tools that we use. So here you can see a couple things. This is a long-handled thing for putting on your shoes. Here we have some what we call ankle-foot orthoses. These are devices people with neurological injuries don't have the ability to pick up their toe a lot of times. So the toe will flop down like this. Their ankle will flop down, and you can't walk if your ankle flops. And then just a simple matter of putting a little band on a pair of trousers can help somebody who doesn't have grip, of course, pull up their pants. All right? But we've got other things. So let's share a little bit for a sec. What do you think these are? You've probably seen these before.
Shoelaces.
And do only disabled people use these shoelaces? Well, that's one of the great things. If you can always come up with a product that can meet the needs of everybody and be stylish. Remember, for a while, this was a really big style thing, and you saw them in all different colors. That's terrific. We talked a little bit when I came in talking about different projects and designs. We talked about the sock putter on earth. This is like this. So if you can't bend, because you maybe have an orthopedic condition, let's say you had a total hip replacement, they don't want you to bend because your prostheses will pop out. You'll pop one of these guys on. You'll be able to put your foot in and doing that. Well, that's good, but what if now you only have one hand and you have to put it on? Then it becomes really, really hard. So take a second and play around with these when they come around. This is another one. There's a lot of different designs, but none of them are really very good for putting on socks with one hand. And this is an old-fashioned tool. Anybody know what this old-fashioned tool is?
What is it? Button.
It's a button hook. Again, if you only have one hand and you have to button, sometimes it's very difficult, and a button hook can help. Or if you have decreased strength in your hand, let's say you've had something happen to your hand, you can use a button hook. And this one is, and also has a little grip for pulling up on zippers. And this is also a little zipper pull, you know, so you can make the zipper pulls larger. So again, if you don't have the grip, right, you can just put your thumb in and pull it up. All right. So let's go on. So we also talked about mobility. So there's a lot of different types of mobility aids. Interesting thing is both OTs and PTs are involved in prescribing wheelchair and seating devices. It depends on which institution you go to as to who does this. And so you'll see a wide variety. Here we have somebody with a quad cane who's having to go up the stairs. Okay, and here we have somebody who's got some really intensely robotic system that allows her to walk. You know, anybody hear about the lady at Berkeley that they designed for? Yeah. And Albert, are you wearing your special device today? You'll see Albert's device in a little bit. So this is another area, of course, that's important. And then we'll talk about self-care. We also need to talk about eating and meal prep. So again, if you only have one hand, there's all kinds of things that become really, really difficult to do. Or if you only have, if you're quadriplegic, how are you going to do this? Well, let's see, if I'm quadriplegic and I don't have use of my hands, but maybe I have use of my elbows, what can I do? Well, I can use a little cuff and I can scoop things, right? I don't have to have a grip in order to do this. Okay. So there's, and you can put all kinds of tools in here, right? It doesn't just have to be spoons. It can be anything. This is another variant of that. All right. But anybody wants to guess on this one? You guys who know can say. Huh? Cindy? It's a rocker blade. And why would you want to use a rocker blade, Cindy?
Cut your meat or cut anything.
Right, because if you don't have a fork to stabilize what you're cutting, it's going to move all over your plate. So you kind of put it under there and you block it, and then you can do it. That looks cool. Again. So this has dual purpose. Dual purpose here. Okay. Anybody want to... So we got prongs here, just like in that picture with the tomato here, right? To hold an object while you're cutting it. And then this part here is for spreading on sandwiches. So you can put your little sandwich in the corner here. All right. And you see here, there's all kinds of... These are plate guards. Again, if you have to push up against something, and you're only one-handed, you want to be able to push up against something. There's even spring-loaded stuff. There's all kinds of equipment out there because this is a pretty important part of daily living, right? Being able to feed yourself. And part of taking care of yourself is hygiene, of course, and being able to toilet, raise toilet seats, the bars. Here we have a bath bench to allow somebody who maybe isn't allowed to put weight or has balance issues to be able to bathe. And we have somebody who's working on their toothbrushing. And we have a lot of different kinds of stuff here for self-care. Here's, again, a hairbrush that is got a little... things so that I don't have to hold it. This again, one-handed nail clipping. It's really, really hard to clip fingernails, or you, in this case, if on the unaffected side, the little thing that holds the little emery board on there. Okay. I love this. When this came out, this was great. All of a sudden, it made flossing for people who had just the use of one hand really easy. And it's a really well-accepted piece of assistive technology, right? Okay. I don't think I have to turn that around. And this is just, again, this is for cleaning your nails. It's got a sucker brush on it. You can do that. Okay. And this is just a wash mitt. Again, if you don't have a grip and you want to hold a washcloth, but maybe you've got some elbow motion or shoulder motion, you can use something like that. Another thing we talked about with Stephen Hawking, of course, that communication is a really important part. So communication also includes writing communication, as well as this is a communication board that's attached to a computer. It allows people to push or use a sip and puff and have words be said. And then one that's commonly used nowadays is what? What might this represent? What do you use on the phone? What kind of assistive technology for communication besides the phone can you use? How about Dragon Dictate? Anybody have Dragon on their phone? Anybody ever use Dragon to do things? Yeah, it's a powerful tool. Once you train it, it's pretty powerful. This is a weighted pencil. Sorry about the lead's gone. But this is a weighted pencil that's for people who have Parkinson's or essential tremor. The weight of this can sometimes depress the tremor. It's got a engineering problem, though. So when you go around, see if you can figure out what the engineering problem with that is. Okay. And here's another one. This is a little adaptive pen. This is great for people who have arthritis. Okay. Because I don't have to push a lot with my thumb, which you see my brace on it because I have arthritis in my thumb. So. They sell them everywhere now. And it used to be you only saw them in rehab catalogs, and now a lot of people are using them. I think because a lot of people are getting old. All right. But we also talked about that there needs to be work, play, self-care, right? So play is an important part of daily life. Here we have a fishing rod that can reel the line in. Anybody ever see this? They have one at Natural Bridges in Santa Cruz. This kind of wheelchair for on the beach. So if anybody ever knows somebody who needs to use one of those, Natural Bridges at the museum has one. Yeah? Ah. And this is a sit ski. Okay. Your ability or your disability shouldn't keep you from doing the things that you find enjoyable in life. And that's one of the roles of an occupational therapist, is to make sure that you can go back and do the things that you enjoy. Sometimes it's hard. And also, vocation and education are a big part of what we do. This guy has got a special standing wheelchair so that he can weld. This farmer has a lift into his tractor. And this woman who can't use her arms or legs has a sip and puff, and she uses it to move the mouse around and to communicate and to type.
I think that's called joust.
Okay. And just in terms of playing, anybody want to guess what this very simple piece of wood is? Why I might use this simple piece of wood. What this is for? Anybody want to guess?
Gambling.
You're right! This is for playing 21 in my classroom, Dave. So this is, you see the slot here on there is for holding cards. So if you have one hand and you try to play games, it's a little bit hard. So having a card holder is a great device. Scissors, adaptive scissors. If you have trouble opening your hand, you can use adaptive scissors. Here's more adaptive writing. I'll leave them up here and you can check them out later. So I just showed you a whole heck of a load of adaptive equipment, right? But how do people get it? You know, how does it get from the MD seeing a person and saying, gee, this person has some need, to getting to the end user? Well, there's a processes that we typically go through, at least in the rehab world. You can get the stuff, a lot of these equipment that I'm showing you, you can get them, just go to North Coast Medical or one of the online catalogs, you can buy them. But if they're talking about big pieces of adaptive equipment or adaptive equipment in which there might need to be some training, what happens is we get a prescription from a doctor, from the physiatrist. And the physiatrist says to us, please assess Mr. So-and-so for adaptive equipment for his ADLs. And then we have to decide, what equipment are we going to get them, and is it suitable for this person? Where are we going to instruct this person? How much time do we have to instruct this person? Can we reinforce its use? Can we get the insurance companies to pay for it? Or who's paying for it? So let's talk a little bit about equipment suitability. So there's a lot of different factors that go into whether a piece of equipment is suitable or not suitable for an individual. It's not a one-size-fits-all. I can't say, Mr. X over here has had a total hip replacement, and Miss Y also has had a total hip replacement. Let's just give them the same equipment. What ends up happening in that case is it may not fit for Miss Y. And there's a lot of reason. Is there a cultural reason? For instance, I had to learn the hard way that sometimes people's culture plays a really big role in what I can do as a therapist. For instance, I've worked with Filipino families, and my goal is to get a person, of course, as independent as possible so they can get home, right? That's the goal of getting somebody out of the hospital. Should be independent as possible so they can go home and live the way they were living before their injury or illness. And I found out the hard way that when I kept meeting resistance with this person, I kept wanting to do dressing training with them, and they didn't want to do dressing training. It's like, why don't you want to do dressing training? And we found out the reason why they didn't want to do dressing training was because their families, they knew that they were going to go home, and their families were going to dress them, and that was just a part of the culture. So you have to be careful when you're looking at this as to what's accepted in a culture. Not every culture accepts every single piece of adaptive equipment or a rehabilitation technique. Okay? What we talked about a little bit about motivation. What motivates a person? What gets them out of bed in the morning? And what's your perception of self? So when we talk about perception of self, do you see yourself as able with a problem? Or you see yourself as disabled. We know, for instance, that women, when they get a piece of adaptive equipment, if it doesn't make them look disabled, they're way more likely to use that piece of adaptive equipment. These are from outcome studies that are out there. So, for instance, if I give somebody a cane, right, and it's a big, black, honkin' cane, you know, I might be met with a lot of resistance. But if I give them a choice of canes, maybe the cane looks nicer, it's got some flowers, or meets their personality, matches their outfit, I don't know what. You know, it's really on an individual basis. Then that person might use that device, right? So age, gender, how much education, what kind of diagnosis do they have? Is this something that they're going to use for a long time? Is this something that they're going to use for a short time? Is this a chronic condition? Is this a degenerative condition? What is the cost? Cost is really, really, really big, and we'll talk a little bit about more about cost and where people live. Anybody want to guess why where people live might affect how I prescribe adaptive equipment? Anybody want to guess? Wild guesses? Okay, all right. Public transportation versus driving. Okay, what else? Some countries aren't wheelchair accessible.
If something breaks, it needs to be repaired. If you're out of the country, though, it'd be more
difficult. Right, and if you have a transportation issue and you're way out in the country, and if you rent your place, you might not be able to put in certain pieces of adaptive equipment that you might need. So there's a lot of different reasons why equipment suitability. And these are questions that I go through. When I assess somebody for a piece of adaptive equipment, as I said, I don't just say, oh, this person's total hip, give them this, right? So I have to look at all these different factors. Otherwise, we find out that about a third of the adaptive pieces of equipment that get issued aren't used. A third, one third. And that's from outcome measures. And there's a bunch of different studies with these outcome measures. One third is not used. And some of it's for good reasons, like they no longer need it, right? That's a good reason for not needing the adaptive equipment. Sometimes we give people too much adaptive equipment, and it's overwhelming. Okay. So, big question. We're talking about cost, and cost is a big problem when it comes to rehab equipment. Rehab equipment can be quite expensive, like way more than it should be. Okay, that's why sometimes, because it's specialized, right? There's not necessarily a huge market for it. So when we look into giving somebody a piece of adaptive equipment, We have to be careful about who's paying. When I work at the VA, I'm pretty lucky. They pay for just about everything. When I work with Medicare and Medicaid, they don't. They might say, you can have a bath bench, but you can't have a bath bench and a commode chair. Okay. And so sometimes I have to get creative. Sometimes we have to look for other funding sources. And we have to be careful of how we write a justification for the adaptive equipment we get.
Or sometimes they don't need wheelchairs if you can walk.
Right. Yeah, and it doesn't matter. They can, if you walk 25 yards, that may they may think that that's enough to not give you a wheelchair, when the fact is that you can't get around in the community without a wheelchair. And again, it's a matter, Albert, right, of a personal preference as to whether you have a wheelchair or don't have a wheelchair in that situation. So training. So I can't just give a piece of equipment like a wheelchair without doing some training. There's safety reasons, right, that we have to go through. So, and there's a lot of different ways. So repetition, repetition, repetition. But not only in the hospital, but when they get home. The best way to do that is for there to be follow-through. Unfortunately, a lot of insurance companies don't pay for that follow-through care. A lot of follow-through care that happens in the home is happening with people paying for it on an individual basis. So, again, with the training, so if we talk about a low technology kind of adaptation, such as pointing, easy, you know, maybe learning a little bit of sign language, or maybe doing something like using this pair of scissors, right? This is a real low tech. I don't need to really train you much at all. I can show you how to use it once, and that's going to be good. You're going to figure it out. When we talk about elementary technology devices, they require a little bit more training. Those are your wheelchairs, some of the battery-operated devices, and then we have our high-tech devices. Things like Dragon actually do require quite a bit of training on how to use properly and take a lot of time. Electric wheelchairs are another example. You can't just let somebody go, you know, crazy with an electric wheelchair without knowing what they're doing, because they'll smash into walls and there will be all kinds of problems. Okay. So when we talk about reinforcement of training, there's a phenomenon that happens when people transition from the hospital to the home environment, in which people almost forget 50% of what you've taught them in the hospital, because it's really overwhelming. Nowadays, for instance, for somebody who's had a stroke, they may be in the hospital for 2 weeks and maybe in rehab for another couple weeks at a subacute nursing home. But that's not enough time to really cement down some of these practices and using this adaptive technology equipment. And we also, if we don't go into people's homes, we don't know whether this piece of adaptive equipment we're going to give them fits, right? So is the bath bench I'm going to give you, is it going to fit in your bathtub? I don't know. We do have support groups for people. It helps. Refresher training may be necessary, but again, insurance may not pay for it. And we know that about, if we consider the poverty level, and we look at the poverty level for people with disabilities, severe disabilities, versus people without severe disabilities in the 21 to 65-year-old age range, people with severe disabilities are 3 times as likely to fall below the poverty level. So that's why price and cost is really important. So let's take a look at a piece of adaptive equipment and kind of go a little bit through the procedure here. So here we have grab bars. Pretty standard. So somebody's in for, let's say, a stroke. And they can't stand so well, their balance is a little off, or they've had a total need to have something there for security reasons, so that they can safely bathe, right? And they can get in and out of the bathtub easy. So we get a prescription saying, evaluate this person, right? And then I have to look at the suitability. So what factors might I look at in order, when I make a decision whether or not, or what kind of grab bars I'm going to give?
Well,
Anybody? What factors might I look at here?
Material.
Like what? Tell me how. Okay, range of materials that could be used. I'm thinking of something a little bit more basic. Yeah, if you rent, that's a big one.
The length and the shape.
The length and the shape. Might, where are the studs in your house? Can you actually put those in? Do you rent? Right. What else?
Quality.
Quality is a good one. Because we want to have something that's durable if you're going to use it for a long time, right? Do you have somebody to install it in your house? I'm sending you home. This is an easy piece of adaptive equipment. Put in a few screws, but let's see. You just had a stroke. I've just sent you home with a grab bar. What you gonna do? So you got to have somebody who can install it for you. Otherwise, why should I give you the piece of adaptive equipment? Maybe it's a piece of adaptive equipment that doesn't require this kind of installation. Okay? So when do you think I'm going to introduce this particular device in terms of the rehab phase?
When people go home.
Yeah. How about beforehand? How about beforehand? When they're in the hospital. We would like them to train in the hospital using similar equipment that they would use when they go home. Again, making that transition a little easier. So reinforcement of use. And then what do you think I need to do? Who's going to pay for this? Well, it would be nice if the insurance company paid for it, so I have to go to write a justification. Why? What's the justification for this? Okay. So how do I justify this? In order for a person to be independent in their bathing, they need this device to be safe in the bath because of decreased balance and mobility, right? So here is actually some outcome statistics looking at grab bars. And of the grab bars, that of 102 grab bars, and looking at the follow-up on these that were given, most of them, you know, used the device. 72 out of the 102 used the device. 30 are not using the device. Now, those 13 never used the device. Some of them, three of them didn't need it, okay? And, again, remember we talked about looking at the whole picture? So, four people had other help, and they didn't need it because they had other help in the household. Maybe they had a spouse who could help them. Two said it didn't work. Well, gee, a grab bar not working? So why do you think a grab bar might not work? Maybe what?
Positioned at the wrong height.
Positioned at the wrong height? What else? What other reasons might it not work? Maybe they can't grip, right. So it's not a suitable piece of adaptive equipment for that person if they can't do those things. Or maybe I didn't give them good enough training, right? Or maybe they forgot their training, so they didn't really know how to use it. And three other reasons, okay? So, again, so when we're looking at something way more complex than a grab bar, when we're looking at something like an electric wheelchair, we really have to consider quite a few different options. And there's a lot of different pieces of equipment, a lot of different companies out there, and they each have pluses and minuses. The big thing is they cost a lot. And if you had to buy these yourself, you probably wouldn't. And they break down. There. Huh? How often do they break down? They really range. Do you know how much yours cost, Albert? $7,000 to $24,000. When we start talking about advanced seating systems, we start talking about a lot more money than that. Things are expensive. You don't want to prescribe something, have the person get it, and it not work because it doesn't fit in their house. It doesn't fit through their doorways. How do you convince them? There's people out there who are much better than I am. There's a whole litany of kind of buzzwords that you need to use in terms of, you know, this person can walk this much with this kind of, success, but they're unstable and they're not safe, and you know, they have a need for being out in the community, and they can't really meet their community needs. They can't work. They can't, you know, get their education for whatever reason. There's a lot of different reasons you might do this.
It depends also on this disability, right, or left, or arm, this.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have to. So there's people out there who that's all they do is kind of write these justifications to the insurance company. Again, we're really lucky at VA that the justification is pretty small. We don't have to write full 3-page reports on things. It's hard. It's really hard to get insurance companies to pay. They don't want to pay. They really don't want to pay. And sometimes it's really, really necessary. But I'll use another example. I have somebody who's one of the people I work with who we would really like to get an electric wheelchair for, but the wife really doesn't want him to have it. He can't go more than a few feet without some really severe pulmonary problems. He's also had a stroke. This would allow him much more independence from her in the community, yet we cannot convince her of that. And so she has prevented us from being able to get this device that would really free up this person. So it's not just the patient. Sometimes it's a whole family that you have to treat.
I guess with, like, grab bars, for example, what's the line between having them prescribed for, like, just in case, like in the shower, like if they have a balance problem, they don't want like the grab bar there just in case,
mm-hmm.
versus they've already had a hospital stay. Like, is there a line between how you prescribe that, or
he's asking that what's the line between preventative care and caring for somebody who's already got a disability, who has an obvious need. And you can make justifications for preventative cares, but you can't get insurance companies, you can't just say, so-and-so's old, so we're going to go and, you know, give them a grab bar. That doesn't work. That's when families end up buying it themselves. And that can happen. We can say, you know, might be a good idea to install it now. I know that one of my doctor friends, when they redid their house, one of the things that they did when they were remodeling the house was they made sure a couple things. One is that they had sufficient room in the hallway to be able to turn a wheelchair so they could go into the room. Okay. A lot of these older ranch-style houses around here, this is a real problem. These doorways are really narrow. You're having to take sometimes off doors or change things. And they said, no, we're redoing the house, so let's do this. They also put in grab bars, which if you actually look in places, are becoming almost fairly standard. If you go into hotels and stuff, you'll see them in a lot of places. And the other thing is that if you're not putting in grab bars, you're changing where the stud location is, because grab bars come in certain lengths, like 18 inches, and that's not a standard length necessarily between studs, so you can change that. And some of us are thinking ahead, but we're paying out of our own pocket. Yeah. Here's an example of a really, really, really high-tech device. This is called the SaboFlex, and it's designed to aid somebody learning how to open up their hand. And what you'll see when I bring my people from Reach down is that with stroke or some neurological injuries like brain injuries and some of the other conditions, you'll sometimes see what we call flexor tone, which means that the flexor muscles in the forearm and arm are really tight compared to the extensor muscles. They're really, really, they're not necessarily strong, but they're really tight. The muscles get really tight. It takes a while to kind of stretch them out and bend them out. So it's sometimes really easy for them to, you know, if we get their hand finally open, they can sit there and they can grab onto something, and then they can't let go. And so Sabo said, well, let's come up with a really cool device to help them learn how to let go and to help to balance the muscles and maybe strengthen other parts of your arm. And for the research shows that it's great at strengthening shoulders, it's great at strengthening elbows, it's not so good at strengthening hands. As a matter of fact, if you're not wearing this typically, you can't open your hands still. So here we have a device that's one, it's probably over this now. This was at least a year or two ago. It's $1,690. No. No. This is a mechanical device. This is a mechanical device. If, what you can't see here, I don't know, did you bring yours? Okay. Well, we'll show it later, and you can play around with it. It's a mechanical device. It's got spring-loaded, or here you see there's kind of these little rubber band things. Now, think about this. You got one hand. This other hand is all curled up, and you're trying to get it out, and you're trying to get it in there. How many people do you think can do this independently? Not very many. So it's a problem. But, you know, and it, but the reason that they can sell this product is because it's a product based on hope. People want to be able to open their hand, yeah? Does this work? The research is showing not, again, not so well. The outcome measures are not so good. And so we have to be careful when we buy onto new pieces of technology to make sure, again, that they fit the need and the expectations of your client. So how does this all relate to you and what you're trying to do in terms of designing? So it's really, really important, as Gail said on Tuesday, to involve your stakeholders and all of your stakeholders, not just the people who have the disability, but the rehab team that may be working with the people who have the disability. So, and again, remember we talked about the person being able not able to get the wheelchair? That was a family member. So talk to family members, because family members are oftentimes a really big component in the entire rehabilitation process. Why didn't the wife want him to have... She was open to him walking, and on occasions her pushing him in a chair, but not very much because she was getting older. She was having trouble, speaking about problems, she was having trouble getting the wheelchair that they did have, the standard wheelchair, into the trunk of the car. But to try to get an insurance company to pay for a lighter wheelchair just because the wife can't get it, almost impossible. But the interesting reason, the reason that she was closed to the idea of him getting the wheelchair was because she felt that if he got the wheelchair, that he wouldn't walk anymore and that he would further decline in terms of his function. And in fact, I don't think it would have made a really big difference because all he was doing is sitting in his chair at home because he was too exhausted because of his pulmonary problems to even use the standard wheelchair. So he was pretty much trapped. And that was a problem. Okay, so take a look at what's out there. So when you are designing a project, is there something that's out there already? Are you going to modify something or are you going to design something from the ground up? Again, you might want to ask people, the end users, you might want to talk to the therapist and see what already exists out there. What do we know? Why does it work or why doesn't it work? And you really want to take kind of an iterative, you know, multi-criteria approach to your design. And you want to look at a lot of different parts of this. I'm going to actually use my cheat. So we talked about functionality, and part of that is performance. Is this an acceptable thing? Does this meet the end goal? Does this get this person as independent as possible? Okay. Is it attractive to all? Acceptability. Is it attractive to somebody? Does it appeal to all their senses? Is it a pleasure to use, or is it something that's a chore to use? Okay. What's the ease and intuitiveness of its use? Do I need to give you a lot of training? Do I need to give you a lot of documentation that goes with it? Do you have good support? If it's a product like the SaberFlex, do I have good support for it when things go wrong with the device? Accessibility also should include cost. Okay, so we talked again about a lot of people below the poverty line. Excessive cost will act as a barrier every single time, whether the device is purchased by the individual or whether it's purchased by the insurance company, by third-party payers. Third-party payers are not going to want to pay any more than they possibly need to pay. Do you have a robust design? Is this product going to fall apart on you a week after you get it home? You want something that's easily upgradable if you're doing electronics, right? That's low in repair and maintenance. And the final thing I want to say to you is don't over-engineer. It's really easy to fall into the trap of over-engineering a project. And for the most part, the best devices are those that are simple and inexpensive. And we'll go to the second part of the talk, which is having some of my reach people come on.
So, we've heard of success times. So I'm going to give students the opportunity to leave if they need to leave. But I encourage you, if you can, stick around, because Debbie is going to bring up some of the students.
Yeah. And you can ask questions of them. Here are some end users, and it's they have some very interesting perspectives. So if you can stay around, that would be great. Do you guys want to just sit there? You guys want to come up here? Or? Want me to bring you?
Thank you.
Don't let them see. You gotta come down. You can come see it. Isn't that wild?
Okay. What's the material on this
front? I think there's a bunch of kydex in there.
What?
I don't know. I think it feels like it's kydex. Oh, the string? I don't know what the string is. I think this is feels like it's wire. Wow, I thought I had that set on zero.
That by the end of the day tomorrow. So remember that if you really want to work on a project and nobody else is working on that project, you can be a team of one. So please consider that.
Oh, we need one more. Are you going to come down, Karen? Okay. Are you coming down? Oh, do you have one more chair?
Yeah.
Okay. You coming down, Karen? Gary, you might want to come down, too, because it would be interesting to hear from your perspective, too. These are students of mine from the REACH program. The REACH program is a program designed for post-stroke survivors to do community-based rehabilitation. And I've worked with some of these people on and off for over 5 years, right? More on than off. And this is Alan. And Alan has aphasia, so it sometimes takes him a little while to get out what he wants to say.
Yeah.
And Jackie, you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Jackie. I was a robotic engineer.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
So now I'm reverse engineering my own robot.
And Jackie is one of the few people I know that can actually put the SaberFlex on himself. I have trouble putting it on.
You too.
Yep. You can put it on yourself? Okay.
few and far between, I gotta say. And do you find that it works for you the way you want it? Yeah. So, Karen, would you introduce yourself? Introduce yourself.
I'm Karen.
Uh-huh. And
Albert is Ethan.
And they've all had neurological disease that is related for stroke. And did you have an embolic stroke or a bleeding stroke?
No. Embolic. Yeah.
Embolic means that there's a blood clot that forms and keeps the blood from getting there.
I got a blade in my head, so then you punch two holes to release the pressure.
Uh-huh. And you had something a little bit different.
I believe
it's
one place.
Yeah, you had burst aneurysm? Burst aneurysm in Albert?
I had a clot, which made me have this stroke.
And before your stroke, you did what?
Work-wise. No,
yeah, work-wise.
I was an electrical mechanical engineer.
Okay. And Karen? What kind of things did you like to do before your stroke?
Play tennis.
Play tennis. And that's a hard one. That's a hard one. And Alan?
I was lucky, yeah. Missiles. And then
So obviously, having a stroke or burst aneurysm has really changed people's lives. And I know, Karen, when you first came home, you were very reliant on Gary, and now she's pretty independent. I gotta say.
I couldn't talk. I couldn't move. I couldn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
I was totally out of it.
Mm-hmm.
No pain.
Yeah.
She was too thin for about not quite 2 years.
Oh no,
she couldn't swallow. But I somehow managed to get her back.
I couldn't talk for 2 years, and I was like, "Pardon me, so much is love."
And we have another kid, another survivor up there. Yeah, and so it's a more and more common problem with the aging population, and I think with our fast lifestyle. see any trends here? and these guys. One of the reasons that I picked these guys kind of to talk to you a little bit is because they kind of come from really different perspectives in terms of how they're using their adaptive equipment, whether they liked it, whether they got enough adaptive equipment when they were discharged, or whether they got too much. For instance, Gary and Karen, you want to tell about your closet full of? And because, can I show them your hand really quick? So Karen's hand, she actually has fairly good use of her arm. You can see here, she can actually bend her elbow well. Yep, beautiful. But you see that the wrist is really a problem, and the hands and the fingers are really a problem. This is what we call this high flexor tone.
You can't see up there.
Yeah. You're going to raise your hand way high. Usually a lot of people get frozen shoulder when you don't move your shoulder a lot, whether you've had a stroke or not. You get stuck kind of at 90. I had a frozen shoulder I had to rehab myself from. Anyways, she would like to have her hand so that she can grab things and it doesn't fall down. Every splint, because her tone changes, it doesn't stay static, doesn't work for her. And you've had
splints that costed $500.
Yeah, this splint is about, when we bought it, was about $400.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it's more money now.
Yeah.
And it's designed supposedly to accommodate that change in tone.
Another product that's suitable.
Yeah, another Sable product, and with these scraps that kind of will give a little bit. But it doesn't work for Karen, and they had to buy it themselves, even though they had insurance and they had Kaiser and stuff like that. They had to buy this themselves. So every time they have a closet that's full of splints that aren't being used.
Is there some, I wouldn't say agency, but someplace where you can swap?
Well, a lot of the splints is about swapping. A lot of the splints are actually custom made. This is not custom made necessarily, and I know that there's some question about reusing durable medical equipment, and there's some legal problems with sometimes doing that. I do know that some people do give them to each other, but this is a pretty specialized person who uses it well. It works really well for some people, yes. And I do know people it works really well for, but it doesn't work for everybody. And just to say that somebody's got a tone that's changing a lot doesn't mean that they should be in the, and wants to have their hands straight, doesn't mean that they should be in the Sable stretch.
Cindy has, she has a Sable flex, and she also has a stretch.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with that was, they came out with a flex before they came out with a stretch.
Mm-hmm.
And it's too bad, because if she had used the stretch,
right,
she'd been able to use the flex a lot better.
Yeah, and I'd say, how many of you guys have adaptive technology that you were issued in the hospital that you didn't end up using?
Well, I had seven bracelets so far, seven.
Yeah, and they keep changing. Now, this is, if you want to see an interesting piece of technology, this is pretty cutting edge. But I'm not sure, Albert likes it. I've watched his gait. I'm not so sure it's improving his gait a whole heck of a lot. Maybe a little teeny bit. We'll have to, it's a bit of a low latency. You want to show this?
I can lift my leg without this.
Yeah.
And it's a simple mechanical. Right.
Put my foot down.
Right.
I don't put my foot in the top of the asphalt. That is
part. Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. And how much does that cost? You know?
$7,800. Comparing.
But Albert likes to be a guinea pig for housing. See, and here's the end. This is the continuum here. We have Albert, who likes everything under the sun. Jackie here, who wants to invent everything under the sun. And Karen here, who loves Gary. And Gary's great. And you're kind of in an in-between place.
I'm not cheap.
So I would like to kind of open it up for you guys to be able to ask these guys some questions. That's what they're here for. Yeah, did you see him good, Emma?
Oh,
yeah. Now here is the Bioness. And Bioness actually works on little electrical stimulation to the muscle, to trigger the muscle and help the muscle to...
Yeah. That's about 7,000.
Right. And, right. This is actually a very smart design in terms of easy on, easy off. Sometimes, though, the electrode placement is not, optimal. And have you found that the electrode, any problems with the electrode pad?
They actually need the therapist to measure and
do that. And so this takes quite a bit of training to use this kind of a device.
Same as this one.
To help his hand, fingers and hand and wrist open.
This is electrode.
Right.
None.
And he works really hard, and that's the ultimate key to success in rehabilitation. If I can give these people 10 bajillion pieces of adaptive technology, and if there isn't follow-through at home, if you're not taking what I'm teaching you in a therapy session and applying it every day, then it becomes really difficult to make changes. Changes can happen over a long time. It used to be that they used to say 6 months, 1 year, you're done. And now 18 years, 20 years, right? We keep going. You know.
It's been 18 years.
Woohoo!
And it's still changing.
Yeah, and yeah. So it's really changed, and what we understand about these conditions like stroke has really changed. And so how we're doing our rehabilitation has really changed. And so, as I said, assistive technology isn't a static thing. It's a thing that keeps changing as we learn more and more about how to treat these conditions.
12 years, the doctor told me I'm going to die within 1 week.
I can show.
I'm still here. Oh. After 12 years.
Nice. That's a smart design. Smart design. Yeah, it stimulates. And some it works, and there's ones now for the elbow and all kinds of good stuff. So Alan, did you bring this? Is this your favorite tool?
Yes.
That's another lacquer knife.
Yes.
Okay.
I have
He has an electronic brace for.
No.
Well, you do.
No. Well, yes, but. I have.
Are you on talk about the gas pedal on your car?
Yeah.
So what happens here? So we normally drive with and press our accelerator and our brake with what foot?
Right
foot. So here there's a simple adaptation. This is actually a mechanical adaptation that he uses in the car. It's a linkage, and it actually has a big honking base plate that keeps it stabilized.
Yeah.
But what's nice about it is he can take it and use it even in a rental car.
Yeah.
How much?
$300.
And that was several years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I have a link to that on the course website for the lecture.
Oh.
I'm wondering if you had
if
out of pocket or
the
insurance.
Yeah.
This is way beyond where an insurance company, because you can't necessarily show that there is going to be this incremental improvement that, you know, well, I'll give this device and now this person can go back to work.
This is a huge issue. They won't buy anything for you if you're not going to improve from it.
Yeah.
And they stop, even outpatient rehab stops very, very quickly. You know, one of the reasons for the REACH program is because rehab stops so quickly when these people still have a lot of room for making improvements. And it's really hard, as I said, to sit there and want to exercise on your own. It's much nicer to come into a community and be able to do it as part of a community. And Jackie, did you want to talk anything about communities?
Well, I think from the strokes of other people, it's very strange. I don't know about how the brain works, but when I see people exercise, my brain starts to follow. So I think this helps for the rehab process. Because like a child, you learn by looking at how people walk. Right? There's no cause to cause. So I believe there's something in the brain to teach you from the visual to the action, the movement. So that's important.
You know, there's some talk about using more telemedicine, tele-rehab kind of techniques, with some feedback devices so that people, you know, can reach the goal. But there's not a good set of stuff out there like that. There's a lot of things that could be developed.
A lot of the rehab is over and over again.
Repetition. Yeah, you have to keep going in the face of very small incremental changes over a long period of time.
I just want to add one point, because I'm in recovery. I rehab myself, so I understand. A stroke, basically, you there's nothing wrong with this leg, there's something wrong with control here. So the key question is how you train from zero muscle. So when you have zero, it's hard to do anything. But in reality, I notice slight movement. So if you guys can devise something to show this actual movement when I want to move, this is a good feedback loop.
Yeah, it's the biofeedback kind of that you guys are working on, right, Cindy? Yeah, Cindy's working with biofeedback, which is really an interesting tool to probably kind of underutilize. Any other questions for these guys?
I was wondering, Jackie, what kind of projects are you working on?
I just
now I'm just stopped working on that, so I just think of different devices to help the stroke to survive. And like I say, the key question for me right now is how you start from zero muscle. When you train yourself to slightly one muscle, then you can keep on training. This thing helps you from zero muscle. This thing helps you from zero muscle. And maybe a sensor in your arm to show you actually when you want to move, to give you confirmation that you actually have signals down there.
Right.
Because the bar feedback is also important.
I know that they use devices similar to that in horses.
Yes. It's called FES, functional electrical stimulation.
This is an FES.
This is an FES device. And there's an FES device. Actually, Alan has one that's for the foot drop. It's an ASO on right now.
I don't know.
So, yeah, you have a little bit. He has a little low ASO on, but he also has an electric one so that it's got a little accelerometer in it. So when he swings through on the swing through phase, it triggers it and it lifts that toe up and keeps that toe from dragging. It works. And again, it takes a lot of training to get it to use it right. And I think that's hard because, again, I felt like they didn't give you enough training when you had started using it. And his gait took a, like, this massive dive. And it was really scary to watch Alan walk. But, you know, you can see, as I said, sometimes somebody wants really high-tech, and I don't know, do you want high-tech, Karen?
I want something that will make me use my hand.
Something that will make her use her hand, yeah. Yeah.
I'm trying whatever they allow, whatever. Any new device.
He does. He is the guinea pig. He is the ultimate guinea pig.
And you always have a dollar system.
Other questions for these guys? Big as in how?
How many
people attend? Yeah. We don't call them patients. We actually call them students. We used to be part of that. And the reason why, I'll just give it a little, we used to be part of Foothill College, but when there was state funding cuts, we're no longer part of Foothill College. We're now... our own very own REACH program. And I'd say, let's see, we've got, I'd say, about 50 to 60 students on a regular basis. And there's a similar program down in Santa Clara called Skills Plus. A little bit different program in terms of what they do. They do a little bit more cooking. I'm like, these guys want to exercise. They really, really want to exercise. So we do a lot of range of motion, some passive exercise, because you have to get the passive movement before you can get the active movement. If you're really tight, there's no way you're going to get movement on top of something that's this tight, right?
It's also
Yeah, there's the ANZA, but it's not necessarily specific to stroke rehabilitation. They have an adaptive PE program. And they understand some of it about neuro, but not all of it. So I see sometimes these guys come in and it's like, I'm pushing weights, and you're going, they're pushing weights, they're using a different muscle than they should be using. So it's like, there's a little bit of a difference between adaptive PE, for sure, and physical therapy and occupational therapy in terms of our training and our sensitivity to issues with neuro rehab. Yeah. Hi, Cindy.
Dan's college has a great program,
yes.
And you're welcome to just walk in and visit.
Yeah, and if you guys would like to ever come to the REACH program, we can certainly try to arrange that. And as I said, these guys are also resources for you, so if one of your projects involves talking to somebody who's perhaps had a stroke or neurological injury, these guys would be happy to talk to you. Thanks for staying extra late, really extra late. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You guys are great.
Please do that now. Please hand in your evaluation form.